Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Sarah.
And we are back, as always, on Monday mornings.
And we have our outlines printed out.
Yes, we do.
Totally old school. And the reason for that is because I was searching my house or my apartment up and down in a panic because I couldn't. Usually, we both have iPads.
Right.
So we can very easily see the bulk of the outline.
Right.
I couldn't find the iPad. I also think I put it on. I was furiously texting my boyfriend, Nick, being like, where is this iPad? He's like, you are the one who uses it.
I know.
I don't know where it is. And he was like, if you FaceTime it, because it's set to his FaceTime. If you FaceTime me, you should be able to, it should be able to call it and you'll find it. And I was like, I put it on Do Not Disturb.
right.
So.
Well, then she texted me. She's like, did I leave the iPad in your office? And so like, I looked and I was like, no. And she was poop.
Yeah, another huge crisis. These are the big problems we're solving.
In our life.
Anyway.
And so I was like, okay, well, it's fine. We can just print out the outline. And she was like, oh.
I know. It didn't even occur to me.
Yeah, good idea.
I don't think I've printed something out in years.
Since college, probably.
Yeah. Anyway. So we're doing it live.
We're doing it live, guys.
We're doing it live. Well, see, you said guys.
Yes.
Okay, this is part of our listener feedback.
It really is. We'll get into it.
Okay. So let's go over what we're going to talk about today.
So first, we are going to go into listener feedback and general updates, as always. Then we're going into Trump bullshit.
That's kind of our perma block two.
It is. It's just Trump bullshit. And then our block three is sort of where we'll switch it up. We'll do an interview.
We'll do a big topic.
Right. Then this time we're doing Russia updates and the French election. And hopefully we'll be able to get some information about Sally Yates' testimony in there. Then we're going to do the gratitude check, which is so necessary. And then we're going to go into, it's Monday, so the Donald Trump dishonor and Dick Watery.
Yep.
And we have a lot of material to work with, so that's great. Just kidding. It's horrible.
It's horrible.
And then...
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. And then our last block is our new block, the action items and what you can do after you're done listening.
Which people seem to be really taking to, and I'm really glad we added it.
Me too. It's a really good, solid, you can do this. Okay, Sarah, let's get into some listener feedback.
Yeah.
So what do you got for us?
So we got a tweet from April. She said, Hellbent, I can't say how awesome y'all are. She used y'all, which we'll get into. She said, I feel like I got this political shit on lockdown at this point. Thank you so much. Hashtag resist.
Yeah. And this is, again, one of our favorite pieces of feedback we get, which is that you're learning from us and you feel empowered by the conversation that we're having. And we're just so happy.
Yeah. It feels like a great back and forth between us and listeners. So thank you, April. People were also really stoked on our Marcus Johnson interview, which we really enjoyed. We had such a great time chatting with him. I always feel like he offers such valuable perspective.
He does.
He's someone that I've followed on Twitter for a while, and he's, again, one of my favorite follows.
Yeah, he's great. And he's hilarious on Twitter.
Yeah, he's really great.
Yeah. Okay, so next, listener Cordy tweeted, I love how after... Hellbent finished discussing you guys. Devin Handy slips up with you guys. I know y'all are trying though. Okay, I totally did this.
It's funny because when I listened to the episode, I texted Devin immediately.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I said you guys at least three times in the first 20 minutes after we said we're going to work on it. But we did say it's going to take more than one episode.
It is. It's really hard. Eradicating crazy from my vocabulary was difficult too.
Sure.
I've gotten better about that, but it's still... not perfect. And
it's a process.
And you guys is particularly
I know,
just ingrained,
so second nature.
Yeah. So hopefully we both get better at it quickly. But we'll
see. Trying to be more and more cognizant about it. We also heard from Cassie, who said she said, I like that you say you guys on the podcast. It feels like you're talking to us, not at us.
Yeah. And we definitely want this to feel like a conversation, which is, we want it to feel like we're talking to you guys and with each other.
To you guys. See?
There
we go.
To you guys.
So we do want it to feel like a conversation. We have to, because it is so, it's such muscle memory, it's going to take more than one or two episodes, but we're going to really, really, really try to be as cognizant of as possible of saying, y'all or friends. Y'all doesn't feel natural to me.
I don't know if I can do y'all.
For a Californian to say that, yeah. But I think friends is a good one.
Friends.
So anyway, thanks for sticking with us. And, you know, we're definitely really trying, but we're working on it.
Yeah. Also, we had another listener, Sarah, email us. She's a physician, and she said that, quote, the term to use when talking about trans people who get surgery is gender confirmation surgery, not transition. We are confirming their gender when they have top or bottom surgery. And she also talked about how Planned Parenthood isn't necessarily a line item on the budget, but is a general discrimination against women receiving Medicaid benefits, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah.
And gender confirmation surgery is a great...
Seems to be a better phrase.
It's a better phrase.
More accurate and compassionate.
Yes. So thank you, Sarah, for emailing. That was really helpful.
Yeah. We also have, one of our listeners, Samantha. She started a book club.
Yes.
As an offshoot of our Facebook group.
Yes.
And I love the name. It says it's Fight Like Hellions.
Yes.
A feminist book club. So if you are in the group,
yes.
You can join it.
Yes. And then we'll have a link to join that group if you want to request directly.
Yeah, it's a closed group.
It's a closed group.
You have to be admitted into it. And then this month's book is The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes.
And then we'll be voting on a June book.
This week.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I think we said it last time, but I don't read as much as I used to. Like, novels.
Yeah.
You know, I read a lot of articles.
Right.
But, you know, so it's nice to have a forum specifically for reading.
Yes. And then we have a little merch update.
Yes. So we put the Dickwads Be Gone merch up in the store.
Yes.
And I love it.
Yes. But, it's really great.
But I'm also biased because I made it.
Yeah.
So.
I love it though too.
And then we have Martha merch coming this week.
Martha merch. I feel like we have to do that whenever we say Martha merch.
And I'm also really excited about the Martha merch. Again, I'm biased. I made it.
Yeah.
But
Hashtag not your secretary.
Hashtag not your secretary. I'm really excited about it. And if you keep sending merch ideas and like items you want to see, I definitely, like I said, I keep a running list.
Sure.
And we're always looking for fun things to put in our shop. So yeah.
And then lastly, for everyone who's a Patreon contributor, so if you're $5 and up Patreon contributor, you get access to exclusive content. So these are the topics we'll be talking about this week on Patreon. A Flynn associate's mysterious work on the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really, really wild story about
that
couldn't even fit on here.
No.
Because these are our times. And then there was a story about Customs and Border Patrol having a corruption problem, which we're going to delve into. There was also a story about federal employees being forced to watch Fox News, which is just...
I mean, if they wanted to make this seem like state media, they're doing a good job.
Yep, totally. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing... Trump released a signing statement attached to the spending bill, sort of questioning the constitutionality of funding HBCUs and other minority education programs. So we're going to be diving into that as well. So those are the Patreon topics for this week. Okay, Devin, let's get into some evergreen, but new, Trump bullshit.
Yes.
So the first story is, again, this is one of these stories that in any other administration would have just sunk the entire administration.
Right.
But this is just a line item.
Right.
But let's talk about the Kush.
The Kush.
His family has shown up, and they've said some interesting things to potential Chinese investors.
Yes. So the Kushner family, specifically Jared Kushner's sister,
right,
who in promotional materials for this event was identified as Jared Kushner's sister.
Yeah, they were very intentional about saying she was his sister.
Right. So they basically had a pitch event in Beijing offering $500,000 stakes to, you know, invest in the Kushner company, and then that would get them an investor visa to immigrate to the United States. So the tagline of this event was invest $500,000 and immigrate to the United States. That was literally the tagline.
Yeah. So that is an ethical minefield.
Oh.
Because, I mean, this program exists. It's not
right.
Like they're saying, like, oh, give us some money and we'll find a back channel.
No.
Like, this visa program exists.
Yes.
But it is very, very, very shady to sort of position yourself as very close to the presidential administration.
Right.
And that you're going to help people, like, oh, if you invest in us,
right,
you'll get to immigrate to the United States.
Right. And so both the Kushner and Trump businesses have benefited from this visa rule in the past. In 2016, Jared Kushner himself raised $50 million in Chinese money by using the EB-5, that's this visa program, to fund a Trump-branded building in New Jersey.
Yeah. And this visa program has actually been criticized by both sides of the yes. aisle, both Democrats and Republicans. And interestingly enough, 80% of these visas are issued to Chinese investors.
Yeah.
And the ethics office reported that a risk of fraud with these visas is really high.
Yeah, and what's also really interesting is that Trump signed an order extending this visa program one day before this event in Beijing.
And I believe at the event they were talking about how this, you know, people should invest sooner rather than later because
right.
this visa program might disappear down the line.
Yes.
And they sort of, again, positioned themselves as close to the Trump administration because
right.
they are.
And,
like, they would know. So, you know, again, an ethical minefield.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I believe J-Dog is also in his huge portfolio yeah. of things that he is apparently responsible for, even though he has no fucking qualifications. I believe diplomacy with China is one of them.
Yeah.
So again, another conflict of interest.
Yeah. And then at this event, excuse me, an attendee named Wang Yun, a Chinese investor, said that the Kushner family's ties to Trump were an obvious part of this project's appeal.
Right.
And then Richard Painter, who was an ethics lawyer in the Bush administration, who's just been calling bullshit on Trump all over the place.
Yeah.
He said, quote, "It's incredibly stupid and highly inappropriate."
I mean, I think that that sums it up.
I mean.
Yeah. And we try not to use the word stupid. That's like another word that we're, but this is what Richard Painter has said.
And I do love the bluntness of it.
I do love the directness. The other really creepy thing to me about this story, there was a Washington Post researcher in China
mm-hmm.
who was at this event, and sort of at the end of this story, they were talking about how the PR people in charge of this event were, like, trying to prevent attendees or anyone from giving interviews to the press. And they were, like, taking people's shit and,
yeah.
like, trying to, like, usher people out. And they were... I think they tried to kick the Washington Post
out. Yeah, they had all the reporters basically, like, cornered
mm-hmm.
and wouldn't let them, like, record or
right.
take notes, I think. I mean, it was very...
Right. And they said, like, why are you doing... You know, a reporter asked, why are you doing this? And the PR person said, this is not the story we want. Which is, like, surprise. Sorry. Like, you can't control, like...
The narrative.
This is the story.
Absolutely.
But anyway, this woman who was, again, she's a Washington Post researcher in China who... was at this event. She tweeted, "I was threatened, harassed, and forced to delete recordings and photos of the Kushner family recruiting Chinese investors in U.S. green cards." She said, "People from the Chinese company that works with the Kushners on the investment visa surrounded me and grabbed my shoulder.
Mm.
They tried to force me to leave, then grab my phone. I could only get it back if I agreed to delete all recordings and videos."
Which is just so creepy. So creepy. So fucking disgusting.
Well, it's just, again, it's, you know, it's an ethical minefield.
Yes.
Like we've said a couple times. And they're trying to silence people who are telling us the story that it's potentially an ethical minefield.
Which, I mean, it just fucking is.
It is. And, like, to intimidate someone who's working as a member of the press.
Right.
That's, again, that's what kind of makes me nervous
yeah.
about this administration.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, that is a banana story that
yeah.
should be getting more press attention. But because it's the Trump administration, it's just, another thing
like
that
whatever.
Happens. Well, speaking of feeling like we live in just a hallucinatory world.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this whole administration is just a lucid, like, dream.
I'm hoping that's all it is.
let's talk about Trump's budget proposal.
Yes.
To effectively close the Drug Control Office.
Yeah. So, Trump's budget is looking to cut 95% of the drug office's budget from $388 million in the 2017 fiscal year to $24 million in the 2018 fiscal year.
That's like nothing.
I mean, it's nothing. It's literally, so basically it would close the drug trafficking program and the drug-free community outreach program.
Yeah, so they would lay off 33 of about 70 full-time positions.
Yes.
Yeah,
so just literally like gutting this office.
Right.
And, you know, this was part of the proposal that cleared the White House's budget office, so it's unlikely that this funding is going to be saved. It's unlikely that this looks like it's going to happen.
Sure.
And it's interesting because Trump has made such a big deal about drugs and drug gangs and immigration as it relates to drug trafficking. Like, that's a big part of his rhetoric.
Sure.
So cutting the Drug Control Office seems like it would run contrary to this, like, tough on drugs veneer.
Especially since, like, the opioid crisis
yes.
hit so many of Trump voters.
Yes.
Like, white working class yeah. people. So, again, like, the people who voted for Trump, he's not going to help you.
Right. And this isn't really about immigration, obviously. It's about othering immigrants and using the fear of drugs to create fear around immigration.
Right.
And this drastic cut to this office that's on the front line of, you know, the so-called war on drugs just proves that.
Right.
You know, and then this is also the public health side of solving the drug problem.
Sure.
So border control, strict drug laws and sentencing, and a fucking hashtag fucking wall, that's kind of the law enforcement arm.
And obviously there are questions about how effective some of these right. methods are.
Absolutely.
And necessary. Right.
right. But then the more like the public health approach, like dealing with addiction at a community level.
Right.
You know, it really seems to be breaking another campaign promise.
Well, and also, like, just to bring it to that, on that note, it's, you know, we have a problem with the criminal justice system sending nonviolent, just so many nonviolent offenders
right.
To prison who have drug problems, who would probably right. be helped if
by
we had better, you know, better resources.
And community outreach.
Community outreach to get people off drugs.
Yeah. And the Washington Post had an interesting quote. So, quote, as a presidential candidate, and again after the election, Trump promised to fight the opioid crisis with a two-pronged strategy, a border wall to stop the flow of drugs into the country, among other things, and localized efforts to fight addiction with clinics and increased access to care. Those promises suggested Trump was interested in at least maintaining the public health programs currently in place, and obviously that's just not going to happen.
Well, here's my just general thing with Trump.
Mm.
He spoke in a lot of overarching, like, generalities.
Right.
Like, I'm going to defeat ISIS. I'm going to stop stop immigration.
Right.
We don't use the term illegal immigration.
Right.
But he has said illegal
right.
immigration. So he promised all these things, and no one really pushed him as to what his plans would actually do.
Right.
How he would get money, how he would allocate resources.
Right.
How he would tackle these things.
Yeah, he had no policy when he was a candidate.
No.
He had literally no policy papers. He had no platforms.
And this is what drives me bananas, because everyone says, or not everyone, but there are people who say, oh, Hillary Clinton didn't have, like, a message, a vision. Well, she treated us like adults.
Right.
She didn't have simple answers to complex problems.
Right. And she didn't attempt
no.
to dumb it down.
Right. So again, this is the fucking president.
Right.
And he's not gonna help, certainly not gonna help people who voted for Hillary Clinton, and it doesn't appear as he's gonna help the people who actually voted for him either.
Yeah. And so it's a banana story, and it's one of those things that, again, in any other administration, this would literally have people clawing.
Yeah.
And you know, it just has gone completely under the radar.
Right.
Yeah, and so sort of speaking of things that have flown a little bit under the radar.
Well, this story in its nature is under the radar.
Under the radar, yeah. Right. So basically there's a fight to shield Americans from incidental intelligence collection. So this is really important because this is how Michael Flynn was basically caught.
Right.
Talking to the Russian ambassador. So basically, the FISA Amendments Act is set to expire in 2017, and there is some uncertainty as to whether or not the current law will stand.
Right.
So basically, there's bipartisan, you know, collection of lawmakers who are starting to circulate legislation that would basically impose new limits on the government's ability to use information incidentally gathered. So when they're basically listening in on other people.
When they're listening in on foreign officials.
Right.
There are people, Americans, who might get caught up in those conversations.
Right. And there's also something called about listening, where they will literally look at emails that are about the intended target, even though they're not directly to or from the intended target, mm. even between Americans, which is something that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, obviously.
Well, does this have to do with FISA warrants?
Yeah. Yes.
Because FISA warrants are just really hard to get.
They are hard to get.
In the first place.
They are hard to get. So, and they're also talking about how sometimes the warrant, you know, you can do it without a specific warrant. Because FISA warrants to spy on Americans are very difficult to get.
Sure.
But FISA warrants to spy on foreign officials.
Oh, this is what this is referring to.
Right,
so
exactly.
The incidental, and that's what Trump tried to imply, right? When he said, or at first he said, Obama wiretapped me, but then they kind of tried to cover it up and say, oh, well, he was caught up in like these incidental conversations.
Exactly. And originally FISA was set up as a counterterrorism measure in Bush's post 9/11 administration.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so now it's kind of more from just being about counterterrorism to sort of any sort of criminal activity.
Sure.
But it does come at an interesting moment, obviously, because the Trump campaign is being investigated for ties to Russia, and the most damning information is really coming from these incidental or about collection,
right,
like instances, and so they're trying to target like the scope of this and how long they can keep the raw data, but you know, there's a lot of outrage apparently, but there doesn't seem to be any outrage at the ending of net neutrality regulations,
right?
So this seems very
Pick and choose,
like hypocritical.
Right. Well, I would, you know.
I would expect nothing less.
I would expect nothing less from especially Republicans.
Absolutely. And so it's just, it's really frustrating because, you know, so Trump is caught up in this, like, incidental monitoring, and now all of a sudden it's like this big problem that has to be solved.
Right.
Like, he hates leaks now, but he had no fucking problem with them during the campaign.
So who decides whether these, like, the FISA gets renewed? Is it Congress?
It's Congress, yeah. It's going to have to go through... It has to be basically re-upped by Congress. And so they're basically trying to get new legislation that would limit this.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Comey is very, very... I mean, obviously, he's very against this. He's like, this is
put... This is necessary.
Right, and we use this as a necessary tool. There are other
for
things...
For national security.
Right. Right. And so we can do a lot of things in the name of national security.
Right.
So.
And so, yeah, I mean, there are sort of interesting philosophical arguments to be had on both sides.
Absolutely.
Like, how much do we want our privacy to be,
you
know, violated, so to speak.
Right. I mean, that's the trade-off. Right. Privacy for security.
Right.
That's the argument they make. Okay, Sarah. So lots of Trump land bullshit.
Yes.
But let's get into some Russia updates and then the French election.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about the French election?
Yeah, I think we want to start with the French election and then go into Russia. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just the title of this little section for me is, thank fucking God, France rejected Le Pen. Like, how do you say that in French?
Yeah, right? No, it's a good question.
I actually asked, there are people that I know who are French, and I've asked them.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but they told me. So yeah, Macron, who has never held elected office, he'll be the youngest president. He's 39 years old in the 59-year history of France's Fifth Republic.
Okay.
This is according to the New York Times. And yeah, it's interesting because Macron is branded as a centrist,
yeah,
but he is seen outside of the establishment, which feels very counterintuitive as an American.
Right.
Like, a moderate person wouldn't necessarily be outside of the establishment.
They're moderate because they know...
But, like in France, like, the Socialist Party is, like, the establishment left-leaning party. So, yeah, he won 66-34%, which was just a decisive victory.
It was,
he had a bigger margin of victory than the polls had predicted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I think a big part of the reason why this was possible is because nearly the entire political establishment spoke out against Le Pen presidency, even from the center-right.
Yeah, everyone was like, do not vote for Le Pen.
Except Mélenchon did not, which, you know, Mélenchon would have won.
Oh, maybe he'll start his own PAC
and
give $900 to some random asshole.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, nearly 34% of eligible voters did not cast a ballot or cast a blank or null one. So that's the highest abstention rate since 1969.
Which, that's interesting because in the United States, if it was only 34% that didn't vote, we'd be like, what?
Yeah. And I think if you look at the abstention amount, it was higher than what Le Pen even got.
Right.
Although she did earn 10.6 million votes, which is close to twice the amount her father received when he ran his sort of losing presidential campaign against Jacques Chirac in 2002.
Right.
And parliamentary elections in France are next month. So it's going to be interesting because since Macron is outside the political establishment, he doesn't really have
Allies.
So it's going to be interesting to see how those elections shake out and how he governs.
Right.
With having to sort of whip up some support.
Right. Well, and so this is also a significant relief for the European Union.
Yeah, and I think across the Western, the quote-unquote Western world.
Well, yeah, I mean, this kind of shows that this quote-unquote populist movement or wave is kind of coming to an end.
Well, it's crested.
Cresting. Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, with Brexit and then
Trump, obviously.
Trump and Le Pen threatening, you know, to leave the EU and pull out of NATO.
Yeah, although there are other elections that will be happening soon in Europe that
absolutely
we'll be looking out for.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, Macron said, I will do everything I can in the coming 5 years to make sure you never have a reason to vote for extremism again. So he sort of touched upon the fact that he knows that there are people who are sort of attracted to the extremist elements,
right,
and he's going to do everything possible to make sure that people aren't sort of attracted to that. I mean, who knows if that'll be... how successful he'll be, but, you know, I think it'll be really interesting to see what his presidency brings. I'm just glad that a fucking Nazi fascist is not in the motherfucking presidency in France.
Also, well, he's a centrist, and can we just talk about what centrist is in France?
Yeah.
Like, this is a centrist guy.
Right.
Maternity leave for women.
Yeah.
Abortion rights and shortening the visa application process are all part of this centrist platform.
That's like just super moderate.
That's super moderate.
I would take that.
I know,
in the
right?
United States. So yeah, it is really funny, but it's interesting. Like this moderate quote unquote candidate is seen as the third way,
right,
in France. So anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what his presidency brings. Hillary Clinton probably had my favorite tweet, which seriously shaded the media, and I was here for it. She said, "Quote victory." For Macron, for France, the EU, and the world. And then she said, defeat to those interfering with democracy. And then in parentheses, but the media says I can't talk about that.
Hashtag not all media.
Well, that's what's funny. So she's referring to the fact that when she talked about the Comey letter,
right,
and like the hype around that, that certainly interfered. And so,
right,
of course, some fragile dudes were like, what do you mean by the media? Hashtag not all media.
Yep, yep.
I swear, whenever someone says like, well, not all media is the same, I'm like, this sounds like not all men.
No, that's what it is.
Like,
not all men.
Like,
fuck you.
There's a lot of problems with our media landscape. And if you feel personally offended by it, then maybe ask yourself why you feel so defensive.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, but, like, on that note, the Macron campaign was the victim of email hacking.
Yeah.
On the Friday before the election. So the election was on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
This email hacking was, like, Friday night, I believe. And France has an interesting rule where they have a legal prohibition of campaign communications, like, 44 hours before the election.
Right.
So this came right before that. And Macron, at sort of the 11th hour... was able to put out a statement saying that some of the leaks were real, some were fake.
Right. He literally put out a statement 4 minutes before the blackout went into effect.
Yeah.
So.
And so, you know, there was this question of would newspapers in France, even though they would, you know, it's illegal to put out sort of anything about the campaign,
right,
in the media too, would they still publish these emails?
Right.
Because it's, you know, potentially a big story. And Le Monde, who is the biggest newspaper in France, they refused to publish the emails. So cough. American media. Cough.
Yeah.
Maybe you could learn a little something about responsibility.
Right. Well, the best part is that Macron kind of played WikiLeaks a little bit.
Yeah, potentially.
So part of the Macron campaign strategy against Fancy Bear, which is this Russian hacking group, was to sign on to the phishing pages and then plant bogus information.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
It is amazing.
And then the campaign issued a statement after the leak saying many of the documents that were dumped were fakes that they planted.
Yeah, and I don't think they've been able to find very much like information about these leaks. So that's like a kind of a brilliant strategy.
Yeah.
So good job, Macron. Good job, France. Like, thank God you don't have a fucking
Nazi
white nationalist in office, because we kind of do.
Kind of on that vein of Russian interference.
Sure.
So the Senate committee asked Carter Page to reveal his Russian contacts.
Yeah, so now we're moving on to Trump-Russia stuff.
Right.
Some updates here.
Right.
Yeah, this is a really interesting story because they're asking him to turn over any emails or communications with the Russians. And he has said in the past, like, I'm willing to cooperate and willing to... We'll see how much he is actually willing to.
Yeah. So apparently the New York Times is reporting that similar letters were sent to former Trump advisors Roger Stone, Michael Flynn, and Paul Manafort.
Yeah, we'll get into Michael Flynn in a sec, but
oh, yeah.
Page, Stone, Manafort, and Flynn obviously have each drawn FBI attention, though it's not super clear whether it all relates to the FBI's investigation right. into the Russia operation, because I know Manafort, for example, has, like, Ukraine stuff
right.
that could have some overlap, but, you know, he's in hot water over his... money.
Bribe money.
Yeah.
Although I would like to point out that four members of Trump's campaign are being investigated by the FBI, and somehow there isn't, people aren't freaking out about this enough.
Well, that's the problem, is like Trump has moved the goalposts so much in
yeah.
terms of what is sort of norms, what
right.
is considered allowable, what is considered norms, that... It's almost like people are adaptable. They
yeah.
adjust. And
yep.
it's like, well, this is, I guess, normal. And, you know, there that's part of what, I guess, the resistance is like fighting back and saying, this is not fucking normal. Like, and we will get into the Sally Yates testimony, but there were certain Republican senators who were, like, more concerned about unmasking and leaking than, like, the actual potential of, like, compromise and collusion and...
Chuck Grassley.
We'll get into that. But, yeah, so this letter to Page was signed by both Republican Richard Burr and Democrat Mark Warner, who... So the chairman and the ranking Democrat on the committee, respectively. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so Yates, she's testifying as we speak.
Right.
Devin and I watched a little bit of her testimony. We'll get into that after some Michael Flynn news, but
mm-hmm.
lots of interesting stuff there. But let's move on to Michael Flynn. From
yeah.
one dickwad to another.
To another. So apparently Flynn was warned by Trump transition officials about contacts with the Russian ambassador.
Yeah, so the Washington Post is reporting that senior members of the transition team, you know, they were warned about the risks of his contacts. And that was weeks before that December call that led to his forced resignation.
Mm-hmm.
And Flynn was told during a late November meeting that Kilczyk, so the Russian ambassador, his conversations were almost certainly being monitored by U.S. intelligence agencies. So this goes back to the FISA
right.
the incidental conversation.
Right.
Because it's not like they were monitoring Flynn. They were monitoring Kislyak.
Right.
Sorry, excuse me. Kislyak. And, like, as someone who worked in intelligence, Flynn should have known that himself.
I mean, I just feel like...
like, this is how, like, much of a Nimrod Flynn is.
I was going to say, like, he must have known. He was warned about it by his own transition team.
Right.
Why did he still then have these conversations with the Russian ambassador?
I can't tell if it's incompetence or something more sinister or both. It's always both. Yeah, and actually, you know, officials within the Trump team were so concerned that Flynn didn't fully understand the motives of Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, that the head of Trump's National Security Council transition team asked Obama administration officials for a classified CIA profile of Kislyak.
Right, to then sort of illustrate... Like
this guy. This guy might be a little shady. Like, might want to be careful with your handlings of him. And so this request caused the Obama administration to sort of be on high alert. And
yeah.
they delayed telling Trump's team about the plans to punish Russia for its election interference to just mere hours before it happened.
Right.
Because they were worried the incoming administration might tip off Moscow.
Right, right. Which is so worrying on so many levels.
Like, the fact that they felt like they couldn't tell the incoming presidential administration about sanctions because
right.
they weren't sure how deep these Russia ties could be.
Well, and then on that vein, so the Obama administration also was, you know, sort of freaked out because apparently the Trump transition copied and took highly sensitive documents from a secure room at the D.C. headquarters, and they were being removed from the skiff, from the facility.
Yeah, and Malcolm Nance, who's a former intelligence officer, he's often on MSNBC a lot, he tweeted, "This is a major security violation," all caps.
Yeah.
He said, "Clearances should be pulled now and all involved should be debriefed." Why not crisis response docs? Assume espionage.
Right. So apparently some of the documents that were being copied and removed were plans for national crises.
And just like an aside, but it's kind of important. So Representative Eric Swalwell, he was on CNN a couple days ago and he was asked, "What makes you sure that there is collusion between Trump, the Trump campaign, and Russians?" And he said, "Evidence I've reviewed on the classified side." So this is someone who has knowledge, like classified knowledge of the situation, saying, pretty much confirming that he believes that there is collusion based on evidence.
Right.
That he can't talk about, but is classified. So just put a pin in that.
Because we're going to come right back to that.
And we're always going to be coming back to it.
Always. So apparently there were also reports that the Obama administration warned Trump against hiring Flynn.
Yeah.
And so a Trump official is trying to claim that it seemed like Obama was joking?
Oh, yeah, because that's, like, totally hilarious.
That's something you totally joke about, especially if you're the sitting fucking president.
Right. Like, and, you know, the Trump administration knew that Obama had fired him. Like, that is known. So there's so many questions about why they hired Mike Flynn, right?
Yes.
Like, we don't know if it's nefarious or incompetence or both. It's always both.
It's always both.
Also, just a quick reminder, Flynn is also under investigation by the Pentagon's Inspector General over $45,000 he accepted for appearing at a 2015 event in Russia. I believe it was that RT Gala.
RT Gala.
And then over $500,000 his former consulting firm was paid for work tied to the Turkish government.
Yep.
And then just a last note. I think this is an old article, but it resurfaced the other day on Twitter. So
it's made me laugh out loud.
Guys. Eric Trump is probably the most ridiculous Trump.
He's might be the most incompetent.
The most incompetent, the most dense.
Yes.
He basically openly admitted to Russia funding of Trump businesses.
Yep.
So he was interviewed in a golf magazine and
this is so fucking
they asked him, "How are you getting $100 million for a golf course?" Because at the time they were like, no American banks are giving loans for golf courses.
Yeah, it was after the recession.
And Eric Trump said, "We get all the money we need from Russia." Literally, that's his quote.
I love that.
I mean, come on. Like, there is clearly financial ties.
Yeah.
And we just don't know how seriously, if Trump is compromised at all. But,
right.
Like, it's pretty clear there's a potential money trail there.
I mean, I will keep saying it until it happens. But, like, Deutsche Bank is involved. Bank of Cyprus is involved. Like, there's a whole web of money that we don't know about.
Yeah.
And we won't know about until Trump releases his tax returns.
Or if there's an independent investigation.
Right.
Because, I mean, just to move on to Sally Yates.
Yes.
So the Senate committee, you know, is, it's happening right now. They're talking to Sally Yates and James Clapper.
Yes.
Who is the former director of national intelligence for Obama. And so there was a couple of interesting things that we wanted to highlight. Again, we were recording this in the midst of this testimony, so we don't have all the details, but a couple things that stood out to us. Republicans seem to only care about the unmasking and the leaks, which we talked about.
Right. So Grassley was asking.
And Graham, too.
And Graham.
But especially Grassley.
Man, Grassley spent his entire allotted time asking about, like, incidental recording and unmasking of names and whether or not they had shared this information with anyone.
It's all, like, Trump bullet points.
Yeah, and, like, both Yates and Clapper were, like,
What? I mean, obviously, James Clapper was like, yeah, I've asked for unmasking.
Well, of course, and, because, like, it's a procedural thing.
But the Trump administration is trying to act like it's nefarious.
Right.
So that was interesting. Again, you guys, these quote-unquote good Republicans, they're not fucking patriots.
Nope.
Like, we need an independent committee. Sally Yates also said that the Flynn predicament, you know, with the Russian ambassador, created a situation where he could very well be compromised by the Russians. And, like, obviously you don't want that in your national security advisor.
Actual quote from Sally Yates.
Yeah.
Quote, "Not to state the obvious, but you don't want the national security advisor compromised by the Russians."
Yeah, like...
Like, she literally spelled it out for them.
She was like, just in case we, you know, don't remember what normal is supposed to be. Political normalcy.
Right.
I think the big question... So, a lot of Sally Yates' testimony seems to confirm these newspaper reports.
And the timeline of what happened.
So, she, you know, she told... She came to the Trump administration and was like, hey, this guy Flynn could be compromised.
Right.
And then she got fired not shortly thereafter. Uh-huh. And then they waited like over 2 weeks to fire Flynn. And
18
it was
days.
Only because these newspaper reports came out.
Right.
She seemed to confirm a lot of the details in them. So the big question is, why did the White House wait so long to fire Flynn?
Right.
If they were told by Yates and the DOJ, this guy could be really fucking compromised.
Right. And then when they did fire him, why did they lie about the lie?
Right.
So they said that he was fired for lying to Pence. And it's just, why say that?
And also, you know, Rachel Maddow has said this a lot on her show. Mm. She's done a pretty thorough job reporting. Like, there's no way that Mike Pence didn't know about at least, like, the Turkish government.
Right.
The Turkish lobbying.
Right. And some of the conflict of interest there. He was the head of the transition team.
Right.
He would have reviewed all of the disclosure documents.
Right. So that's a little bit separate from Russia. But again, I think trying to paint Pence as this innocent party, I don't fully buy it because he clearly was lying about not knowing about the Turkish lobbying.
I don't trust Pence farther than I can throw him.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what more is revealed there. But so probably the most interesting part for me was, you know, she was asked directly about Trump and Russia collusion.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she can't say if she's aware basically of evidence of it because she'd have to reveal classified information, which
right.
to me is kind of a wink.
It is.
There is, like, I can't say because that would be classified. And again, that goes back to Eric Swalwell saying, I believe there was collusion because I've seen classified information.
Right.
So I am super curious to hear where this goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because clearly there is some classified information that shows that link.
And then my question is okay, so if there is information, like, and it is classified, how do we go about declassifying it? Because at some point, they're going to have to report on their findings.
Right. And the question is how much are they actually going to find? How much can they report?
Right.
Again, with these congressional hearings, they seem to be slowly moving forward. But then you have, like, dick wads like Grassley and Graham only caring about asking about unmasking.
And slowing the process down.
Exactly. So, I don't know. This... Man, I'm waiting for this all to blow up.
Oh yeah, and it's going to.
Well, and we're gonna keep, you know, obviously keeping tabs on it.
Yeah.
So yeah, lots of interesting new details. Okay, Devin, well, we went through a lot of information. So let's get to our gratitude check.
Yes.
What are you grateful for today?
Well, the first thing was a great article on Bitch Media that I love. And it was 100 good things that happened during Trump's first 100 days.
So it's basically one big long gratitude check,
and it was awesome. So a couple of really great things was Pete Souza, the official Obama photographer, has been throwing subtle and delicious shade.
I love his Instagram.
I know,
from
his Instagram. It's so good. So every time Trump does something particularly ridiculous.
Yeah.
He finds like a corresponding Obama moment and puts it on his Instagram.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. The ACLU raised $24 million in a single weekend.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
How did they do that?
I mean, it was after Trump was elected and they were like...
Oh, right. Was that after the travel ban?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Seattle divested from Wells Fargo for the role in financing the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Yeah.
And other cities followed suit.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically taking money out of these programs that are... Mm-hmm. destroying our land. And then one of my favorites that I had no idea is that there has been a singular gender-neutral pronoun since the 1930s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's thon, which is a contraction of that one.
Interesting.
And it was in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary until 1961.
Interesting. I think I read today that the AP style book is going to allow for gender neutral pronouns.
Yes.
For the first time.
Yes.
And they're putting in they
and there as as a substitute.
I think I read that today.
Yeah. I think that sounds right.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was really cool. And so it is like one big long gratitude check. And if you guys need like a moment.
We'll link to it on the website.
Link to it.
Yeah.
The next thing is that LA animal shelters are on track to be no kill by the end of 2017.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So they basically did this through increased funding for spay and neutering procedures. They outlawed puppy mills.
Yes.
And now they require pet stores to use shelter animals.
Oh, interesting.
So when you buy a puppy in Los Angeles from like a pet store, it was a shelter animal.
That's awesome.
And then they're making bigger adoption events and working to lower adoption fees.
Yes.
And kind of related, in Baltimore, Torrey Smith, who plays for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Wait, he plays for the Philadelphia Eagles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he's in, this is happening.
This is in Baltimore. He played for Baltimore.
He used to play for the Ravens.
Yeah, he played for the Ravens.
I was going to say, when I used to watch football, I was pretty sure he played
for the Ravens. He did play for the Ravens. Now he's playing for the Eagles. But he and his wife paid the adoption fees for 46 shelter animals who were part of this, like, big adoption event in Baltimore. And there's a picture of him and his wife and their two pit bulls, and they're so cute. And I love them, and I love pit bulls. I have two 80-pound pit bulls.
So yeah, she does.
They're my babies.
They, like, attack me every time.
They
come
attack with love and with kisses love. Yeah. And, you know, butt sniffs.
And I'm a little frigid and I'm like, please don't lick me.
No, they're great. And so, I mean, again, you guys know I love animals. Yes. So this was just such a great thing to hear about my town. And then the last thing was a Borowitz report, which is like The Onion. It's like a satirical.
In the New Yorker.
It was called French Annoyingly Retain the Right to Claim Intellectual Superiority.
Yeah.
Because they did not vote Le Pen into office.
Right.
So the French can safely remain unimpressed with Americans and American politics.
Yeah. Damn it.
Damn it. Oh, so annoying. Oh. And there was a great quote, and it was, quote, but sitting a few tables away, Helene Commissieu, another Parisian, admitted that she did not understand what all the celebrating was about. We are smarter than the Americans, true, but they have set the bar very low, no? Yeah, we really did, guys. We really did. We had like a hold my beer moment with Brexit.
Yeah.
And got Trump, and, you know.
I just want to point out, though, that France seems to actually have more of a direct democracy.
They do.
And, you know, if we had France's system, we wouldn't have made the mistake we made with the Electoral College.
I just want
to point that out.
No, that is true.
But given the system we have, we fucked up.
We fucked up so bad.
We fucked up.
And so now the French get to continue making fun of us. So that's fun.
Yeah. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
I will
take
French people making fun of me if it means there isn't a fucking fascist Nazi
at the helm.
As their president.
So, okay, Sarah, so what are you grateful for?
Well, speaking of elections and people who should be leaders of the free world.
Oh, God.
I know, it's too real. The first person I am grateful for is Hillary Clinton.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, I'm grateful for her all the time, but especially today. Not only is she sort of expertly shading the media on Twitter.
She is. It's so good.
It's so good.
It's delicious.
But she's also set to launch a resistance PAC.
So this is the kind of PAC that I think Bernie Sanders is trying to do, but he sucks at it.
What do you mean, sour revolution?
Yeah. I'm going to give $900 to some random asshole.
And then blame the Democrats.
And then blame the Democrats.
Yeah, the guy that I endorse, but then I only gave $900. Yeah, we don't need to get into that. But yeah, so she wants to fund grassroots groups that are standing up to Trump. And, you know, just last week when she was talking to Christiane Amanpour, she said she's now back to being a citizen activist, and she says she's part of the resistance, and she's putting her money where her fucking mouth is.
Because that's what true leaders do.
Yeah.
Even though she wasn't elected president, she's still a fucking leader.
Ugh. She still cares.
She still cares.
That's how much she cares about this country.
I know.
This country that has completely shit on her in so many ways.
Because if I were her, I would literally go to my huge, gorgeous house in upstate New York and drink all the wine and tell everyone to go fuck themselves.
Yeah, totally. But apparently she's like super fired up because, she cares. And the organization is going to be called Onward Together, which is sort of an homage to her campaign slogan, Stronger Together. And so she's sort of seeking to act as like the connector to donors and bringing them into groups that she's oppressed by.
Right.
So I'm thinking someone like, for example, Swing Left or Indivisible or Flippable. Like, those are the kind of organizations she would be targeting and helping raise money for them.
Yeah.
So the launch date for her PAC is unclear, but I think they said as early as this week.
That's because she has her shit together.
She has her shit together. and she's made it clear, you know, in her sort of being back in public life out of the woods, that she's not done with political life.
Yep.
And she hopes to help Democrats win back the House and the Senate in 2018. So again, she really fucking cares. And so, you know, I just want to say, while dudes keep telling her to shut the fuck up and go away, she won't stop fighting for
us. She's like, fuck you.
Yeah. And that's why I admire and respect her so much. And I think that's what I love about her.
Yeah.
Is, you know, it drives these dudes crazy.
Yes.
That they can't control her.
Right.
She's a powerful woman. She's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm going to do what I want. And I'm going to help, like, move the ball forward for younger leaders.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, and she lost. I'm sure there are days where she feels sour grapes, but it's not enough to not do something. Like,
right.
She's always looking for a solution.
Yeah.
And that's what I appreciate about her.
I'm going to cry.
I'm sorry. I should have put this at the end
you
so we can have a good cry.
I'm going to have a good cry.
Along that note, the second thing I'm grateful for is Georgia voter registration.
Right. This is great.
Yes. Yeah, so a federal judge has temporarily reopened voter registration ahead of the special congressional election in the Georgia 6th. Which is great because... you know, I guess there was a larger lawsuit that examined whether Georgia had sort of violated federal law by reducing the amount of time state residents had to register to vote, because voter registration was closed on March 20th, despite the runoff being scheduled at the end of June.
Oh, okay.
So the judge ruled that voter registration for the final stage of the runoff election will be open until May 21st.
Yay, democracy.
So yay, democracy. And
yay.
If you're in the Georgia 6th, register to vote or encourage your friends who live there, because there's still time.
Yes. And also, this is what happens when we have a solid, independent judiciary.
Yes.
I'm so into an independent judiciary.
Yes. And I don't know, I'm sure there are other things wrong with voter laws.
Sure.
As there's plenty of bullshit voter laws around the country.
Absolutely.
But this particular thing, I'm glad that people have more time to register to vote.
Yes.
Okay, so the last thing I'm grateful for is a climate lawsuit that was brought by 21 young people. Listener Mary, she emailed us and brought this to our attention, so thank you, Mary. I know that this isn't like a necessarily a new story.
Right.
But there's like updates that sort of make it fresh and new. So it's the first of its kind. And this lawsuit argues that the federal government has violated the constitutional right of the 21 plaintiffs, so they're aged 9 to 21, to a healthy climate system. And it was originally filed actually during the Obama administration.
Okay.
And environmental groups say that this case, if it's successful, could force even a reluctant government to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and take other measures to counter global warming.
Well, this makes sense because they're young, and so they're saying, you can't fuck up the planet for us.
Yeah, this violates our constitutional rights. Yeah, it's interesting because just last year, a court in the Netherlands ordered the Dutch government to cut carbon emissions by a quarter within 5 years.
Wow.
And similar climate-related suits have been brought forth and won in Austria, Pakistan, and South Africa.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's some precedent here.
International precedent. So we don't know how it's going to land in the United States. But a federal judge in Eugene recently said that the Trump administration is, quote, putting the cart before the horse by appealing this lawsuit.
Right.
So the case has already survived two motions for dismissal and is set to go to trial later this year. So this is an interesting thing to watch. Because obviously we live under an administration that gives zero fucks about climate and climate change. You know, we talked about this last week, how they scrubbed climate change info from the EPA.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of on a related note, Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel posted the EPA's deleted climate change page onto the city of Chicago's website. So
the internet's forever, assholes.
It's like, it's funny because, you know, Maxine is like, I don't fucking trust Rahm Emanuel. So even someone like Trump is making someone like Rahm Emanuel look
like,
really good.
Really good, guys. Come on.
Okay, Devin, so it's Monday.
Yes.
So, of course, we got to get into the Donald Trump dishonor in Dick Watery.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a few dishonorable mentions, as always.
There are always just
dickwads everywhere.
Dickwads on dickwads on dickwads.
We've got so many dickwads that we must be gone with. So who's our first dishonorable mention?
Okay, so the first one is actually Texas Governor Greg Abbott. So he signed SB 4 into law, which will ban sanctuary cities in Texas. This also relates to one of our Maxine Waters award winners.
From last week. Jean Wu.
Right. Jean Wu, and also another woman from the week before.
Right.
Who was staging a hunger strike.
Was it for this
SB4?
Okay.
And then Gene Wu, who spoke very passionately
against it.
And so, you know, he went ahead and signed this, and it's just such a dickwaddy thing to do. I mean, there's, at the end of the day, like, Sanctuary City, I've said this before and I'll say it again. Sanctuary City is one of those moving target words that nobody really knows what it means.
Yeah.
And so to ban them is sort of like saying, you know, I ban this concept.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. It's, yeah, there's some interesting details in the law which would make, you know, federal or officers who don't comply with it, like, mm-hmm. they could be punished. There's a lot of sort of pretty creepy things in there. But yeah, I mean, there are sanctuary cities. There are obviously some benefits to it. But there are also critics of, you know, people who want sanctuary cities to be so much more than they are.
Right.
So, but anyway, a law like this is just, yeah, it sends a message that, you know, people who are immigrants are not wanted here.
Exactly.
And that's just terrible.
It's, yeah.
Anyway, so fuck you, Greg Abbott.
Fuck you.
again, state elections, they matter. I know a state like Texas is super red, but
local politics is sexy.
Local politics.
And we know people who are working in groups like Battleground Texas and you know, and then yeah. Flippable and making these states blue.
Yeah.
So next, we have another representative from, I believe, Idaho?
Yes.
Raul
Labrador.
It is Labrador.
Yeah.
Okay. And he said, quote, nobody dies because they don't have access to health care, to which I say, fuck you.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty much what his constituents said at the town hall.
Yeah.
And he tried to walk back the statement and be like, well, I didn't speak as elegantly as I would have liked. But listen, motherfucker, that's the reason why a lot of people die is because they don't have access or resources for healthcare.
And, like, there are not a whole lot of different ways to interpret this sentence. It's mostly, like, you said that nobody dies because they don't... I mean,
and that's just a lie.
And that's just a lie.
Yeah, you know who we didn't put on there who we should have?
Who?
Paul Ryan's spokeswoman, Ashley Strong.
Oh, yeah.
All these motherfuckers are lying.
Just out their butts.
Yeah, she tweeted over the weekend about how, you know, the CBO score... There's a CBO score for healthcare, like the bill has been scored, but she's talking about the first version.
Right.
She's very blatantly lying.
And misleading.
Yeah. And so she had a couple of follow-up tweets. And I don't know if you guys know about
the ratio. I did not know about this until Sarah explained it to me. So
basically on Twitter, the ratio is, trademark the ratio, if your like retweets and likes are like heavily under the amount of replies, it means there's something wrong with your tweet. Like, you've done fucked up. And all those tweets, oh, the ratio was strong. There was like 5,000 replies to like 14 retweets on one of them. Anyway, I called an audible. I'm gonna add Ashley Strong.
Fair.
Paul Ryan's spokeswoman.
Fair.
All these fucking Republicans are just lying out of their teeth. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Right.
They don't give a fuck.
They really don't. Yeah. Oh, I have a whole other thing on the CBO score of the first bill, so we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
When this version gets scored by the CBO, I'm sure I will have a tear to go on.
We'll have plenty of things to say.
Yeah.
Our last dishonorable mention is Alaska State Representative David Eastman.
Now, this is a special motherfucker.
This is, you guys, again, Republican dickwads are everywhere.
Ugh.
He said that women get abortions for a, quote, free trip to the city.
Okay.
That's why, I mean, that every woman I've talked to who's had an abortion is like, I just wanted a trip to the city.
Totally, you know, and then, like, I stopped and got some coffee and, like, mainly, you know, did,
got a
like,
manicure.
And, like, artisanal cages for men. Like, go fuck yourself.
Is this the future that liberals want?
Yes. Artisanal cages for men.
This is the full quote, because I think the full quote is ridiculous. He said, we have folks who try to get pregnant in this state, who means Alaska, so that they can get a free trip to the city. And we have folks who want to carry their baby past the point of being able to have an abortion in the state so that they can have a free trip to Seattle.
Okay, so this free trip refers to the fact that Medicaid can cover travel to Washington State for women who need an abortion in their second trimester.
Yeah, in Alaska.
In Alaska.
Because second trimester outpatient abortions are legal there. And
right.
Actually, in November 2016, the ACLU, the Center for Reproductive Rights, and Planned Parenthood jointly filed a lawsuit against a number of states, including Alaska, stating that the ban on second trimester abortions presents a significant burden for women in the state.
It does.
So that's why they're traveling to fucking Seattle or wherever.
Yeah.
Because your fucking state
is so fucking
outlawed abortion in the second trimester,
which is unconstitutional.
Yeah,
it's unconstitutional.
Yeah,
because abortions are protected up to 20 weeks.
Yeah,
that's solidly second trimester.
Ugh. Yeah, so he made these comments after he managed to include an anti-abortion message in an Alaska House resolution concerning sexual assault awareness and child abuse prevention, which is like, really?
How?
That's like, what? Like, so say someone gets sexually assaulted or raped.
Right.
And they want to get an abortion because they are pregnant with a rapist baby. And now you want to put an anti-abortion message in this fucking bill that is supposed to raise awareness about sexual assault
and child abuse. And so I guess how he did it was he had previously referred to abortion as the ultimate form of child abuse.
Motherfucker.
Which, motherfucker. It is not a fucking okay.
Yeah.
You know what? I can't.
But again, I think we want to highlight this case because this is part of a larger pattern.
Yes.
Of hashtag noted dickwads who made ridiculous comments about abortion recently. So one, there was an Oklahoma representative, George Fott, who said that abortion from rape or incest could be seen as, quote, beauty from the ashes and might be God's will.
Which makes me want to throw up, not just in my mouth, just all over him.
All over him.
And then the one that I can't with is the Iowa representative, Shannon Ludgren. And she said that women who miscarry past 20 weeks should have to carry their fetuses to term, which, as someone who was pregnant, that is the cruelest possible thing.
Also, is that even biologically accurate?
Not really. I mean, there's
you
no... Have,
if you miscarry, that child is not viable.
It's not viable. That fetus is not alive. It's not growing.
She ended up walking back those comments after the outcry. But still, again, women can be dickwads too.
Absolutely. But
lest you forget.
And she...
They can be the biggest dickwads.
And just her saying that was... It was just a moment cruel for me where I was like, that is the cruelest thing I've ever heard in this whole abortion.
Because I've had friends who've had miscarriages.
Yeah.
It's one of the hardest things anyone goes through.
Yeah.
And to put women through a physical and emotional torment.
Right.
Because of your narrow-minded views.
It's just
disgusting.
Horrible.
The other person is Representative John Shimkus. He's a Republican from Illinois. He questioned in March why men should have to pay for prenatal care, which is like, where the fuck did you think you came from? Just a rhetorical question.
Rhetorical question.
Talk amongst yourselves. And then two Republican lawmakers in Missouri joked recently that women seeking abortion should go to the St. Louis Zoo.
Okay, which, again, I'm going to throw up in my mouth.
Yeah. So forever. Anyway, David Eastman is just indicative, again, of a larger pattern of Republican dickwads.
Yes.
So that's our last dishonorable mention. Devin, do you want to tell us who our Donald Trump dishonor and dickwater is?
Yes. I would take great pleasure in doing so. So the, quote, winner this week is Ivanka Trump.
Yeah.
Which, shares a namesake, so I guess that makes sense.
The apple does not fall far from the tree.
From the orange. The apple does not fall far from the orange.
Yes.
So this bitch promoted her Women Who Work book all over her social media feeds, even though she said she wouldn't.
Well, yeah, I think she said she, wouldn't go on a book tour.
She did.
And she wouldn't promote the book, but, she was all over Twitter, all over Instagram, all over everything.
Well, and then the State Department also retweeted a promotional tweet, which is like, you guys, I don't think you understand how this works.
You just said you guys.
Damn it!
Yeah, I'm now the you guys police. Yeah.
Damn it!
Friends, this is not how this works.
Friends, you do not understand how any of this works.
Also, okay, one of the most ridiculous things to me is...
I'm laughing so I don't cry.
In the book, she compared basically rich people's problems to actual fucking slavery. Mm-hmm. Seriously.
Seriously.
In a chapter where Ivanka writes about the difficulties of managing women's schedules, she asks, quote, are you a slave to your time or a master of it? Which is just, incredibly tone deaf. And then she, sort of elaborated on the back-breaking drudgery of returning calls, attending meetings, answering emails. So, again, that in and of itself is incredibly tone deaf. Answering emails is not like being a slave, an actual slave.
No.
So, first of all, shut up, Ivanka.
Yeah.
Second of all, the kicker is that the quote that leads off the chapter was taken from Toni Morrison's novel about slavery from Beloved. And the quote is, quote, freeing yourself was one thing, claiming ownership of that freed self was another. And, Morrison's text reads the freeing there actually referring to actual freedom from actual bondage.
Bondage, right. Well, yeah.
And, like, you know, some intern, like, went on, like, Goodreads.
Yeah.
And just tried to find a quote.
Right, just Googled, like,
without any context, and was like, this seems like a good quote to put in my white lady book.
Right, like, Googled, like, freedom quotes.
Ugh.
Like, whatever.
Yeah.
Also, Ivanka smiled and celebrated the passing of hashtag AHCA and took selfies at the little celebration,
mm-hmm.
you know,
room.
And which makes, you know, and this bill makes rape and C-sections pre-existing conditions. So
what a feminist hero.
Yeah, she's such a fucking feminist.
See, and that's the thing with Ivanka is people, and I think Lisa Bloom made this point on AM Joy this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know, people want to see the good in Ivanka. They want to see that she's benevolent, but she has proven, there's nothing about her in the White House, certainly, that has proven she's benevolent. And I think there's this, a lot of people don't really talk about this, and I haven't even really fully considered it, but she talked about this, like, pretty person bias.
Yeah.
We assume, there is, like, scientific studies that show that we assume people who are seen as conventionally attractive to be
are nicer.
Nicer, smarter,
right.
more talented, benevolent. And it's like, there's literally nothing that Ivanka has done that has proven otherwise.
Otherwise.
Except that she is, for sure, Donald Trump's daughter.
Yeah. And, you know, so, congratulations, you're a dickwad. Okay, Sarah, so after all of that and all the dickwads, let's talk about some action items.
Yeah.
Things that we can do.
Yes, and make a tangible impact.
Right.
Okay, so the first thing that we have is a man named David Yankovic is apparently running against Paul Ryan in 2018.
Yeah.
So I believe you can donate to him on CrowdRise or CrowdPAC.
Yes.
So we'll have the link up on our blog post about it. But listen, if we can get this smarmy motherfucker out of office in 2018,
then,
like, I will hold the biggest of parties.
Seriously. That might be another, like, we rent ball gowns.
Right.
And have a fucking party.
It's like, that's like the cocktail party.
Right.
And then if and when Trump is impeached, that's like,
the ball gown party.
The gala.
I will literally put together a gala.
Yeah.
Like,
you guys.
Damn it!
Sorry, I'm the you guys police now. I'm like, I'm on it.
Shit.
Friends.
I will literally put a gala together. Okay, let's go.
Let's move on.
Okay, so you could also donate to Black Mama's Bailout, which is a part of the official chapter of the Black Lives Movement.
Black Lives Matter movement.
I'm sorry, yes.
In Alabama.
Yeah. Thank you for translating that garbled nonsense. So basically, it's an effort to raise bail money for women to spend Mother's Day with their families. Many of the women incarcerated are there simply because they cannot afford to pay the bail.
Yes.
Bail is often used to keep people in prison for minor offenses, and it disproportionately affects Black women and transgender women.
Yes.
So, you know, every day, so this is from the donation page, quote, every day an average of 700,000 people are condemned to cages and separated from their families simply because they cannot afford to pay bail. So Black women and trans women are especially vulnerable to being incarcerated. Black women are twice as likely as their white counterparts to be jailed. One in five transgender women has spent time in prison or jail, and one in three of them reported being sexually assaulted while there.
And since 1980, the number of incarcerated women has actually grown by 700%.
Yes. So and more than 80% of incarcerated women are mothers, and nearly half are in local jails, locked in cages for crimes they have not been convicted of. So this is a really important...
Yeah, so most of these women are sort of accused of minor drug and quality of life offenses. And, and like you said, are there because they can't pay the bail.
Right.
So I believe when I visited the website this morning, they had reached their $10,000 goal.
Yes, they had.
But I think that the better.
Right. The more women they can bail out for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really great, you know, thing that you can do for...
That's really tangible.
Really tangible and will really impact people's lives this weekend.
For the better. Yeah. And again, we will put that link up on our blog post in the show notes.
Yes.
And then the last thing we have an action item for. So the Women's March.
Yes.
I wish I knew about this earlier, but they're doing a pledge of liberation.
Yes.
And it's happening today, actually.
It is.
On Monday. So we debated whether we should put it in the show because we're wondering if people, it'll pass people by by the time they listen to it, but we figured we might as well put it in.
Right.
So if you go to their website or their Twitter, you can find or register A, a demonstration in your area, but B, there's four different ways to participate. You can sign the pledge, you can attend a demonstration, you can tweet your hashtag Pledge of Liberation, or you can write messages on chalk in streets to your community and elected officials. And yeah, the Women's March has partnered with many groups.
Yes.
That is sort of in their aim to liberate people and bring the message directly to Congress.
Right. So, yeah, they're basically trying to continue the momentum that started with the Women's March. And so there was a great quote. So, quote, "We cannot pledge allegiance to an administration that oppresses and harms us. Instead, we pledge allegiance to the liberation of all people. We pledge allegiance to each other. Just as we pledge our allegiance to each other, we will remind our members of Congress of their allegiance to us, the voters. We ask that this allegiance come in the form of real resistance to this administration's effort to divide and harm us. This means, among many things, protecting our health care, voting against attempts to further legalize discrimination and violence, and voting for a federal budget that reflects the values of 5 million people who marched on January 21st, 2017.
Yeah, and just a reminder, probably one of the most impactful things you can do is to get really involved in state and local politics, and ourstates.org is a great tool.
Yes.
Where you can really track progress of certain bills and push your state legislators on these issues that they've sort of talked about in this Pledge of Liberation.
Yeah, local politics is sexy, guys. Okay, so I think that does it for us.
Yes.
It's been a packed show.
As always.
And we'll have even more topics for our $5 and up supporters on Patreon. So listen for that. And otherwise, we will see you on Thursday. For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we discussed as well as additional resources. You can follow us on Twitter at HellbentPod. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/hellbentpodcast. You can follow Devin on Twitter at Devin Handy, and you can follow Sarah on Twitter at Sarah Lerner.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month. And for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent. And there are lots of other fun rewards for higher levels of patronage, including a monthly Skype session with Devin and Sarah.
And for that one, drinking is optional.
Optional.
Quote unquote.